Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, we're going to be able to appreciate, the whole thing of going from Brazil to the US, not being familiar with tech, all of a sudden, after getting his degree and working for other companies, just going at it, on his own. I mean, what he's done is really remarkable. We're going to be talking about finding product market fit, how to go about culture. We're going to be talking about fundraising too, and all that good stuff that we like to hear. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Lawrence Lynn Murata. Welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Alejandro. Excited to be here.
So originally born and raised in Sao Paulo, with kind of like a nice mix there, with a family, coming from all parts of the world, which I'm sure, shaped you up as well. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, for sure. So I was born and raised in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. I lived in Sao Paulo my whole life until college. My family is half Taiwanese, half Japanese. My great-grandparents from my father's side, they immigrated from Japan to Brazil. My grandparents from my mother's side immigrated from Taiwan to Brazil. Yeah, I mean, Brazil is an extremely multicultural place. I think it was an awesome experience. At the same time, being so far away from Silicon Valley, especially at that time, there were not that many startups back then. So you really had to search for information about, how do I go study abroad, tech, and things like that.
So what ended up bringing you to the US?
Since I was little, one of my life goals is always to, how can I maximize my impact? I feel like growing up, I was never thinking of this idea of coming to the US. I think to me, that was kind of like a separate reality. And I was thinking of becoming a business owner, just like my parents. One day when I was in high school, an English teacher, so I met him, and then he told me about the process to apply to the US. And he was very passionate about having people attend US colleges. Yeah. And then he mentioned how promising he felt my background was and what are the steps required to do that. So I literally became obsessed about that idea. I was like, wow, I thought these colleges were things that I just see in movies. They're so outside of my reality. And now this teacher is telling me that he sees potential in me being able to apply to these colleges. So literally every day I was at his door, asking questions about, what's TOEFL? What's SAT? How does this work?
Obviously, you ended up landing in Stanford, and Stanford has had an incredible impact in you, in your career, in your choices, in your decisions. How would you say that, Stanford as a whole, shaped you up?
I mean, what's interesting about the California culture in Stanford is just how close academia and industry feels. So a lot of my teachers, they were also in industry before, or they are in industry at the same time while they're in academia. So it feels extremely close. I feel like I like the US college style where it's very application focused. So I studied computer science, we'll focus on AI. And back then I was doing a lot of projects and everything's extremely hands-on and you're close to these great companies like Apple. And I got the opportunity to intern at this company. So I think being so close to the industry, having hands-on courses, I think that really opened my horizons.
As well as experiencing too the inequality, and getting super excited about social impact while you were living in Brazil. So what kind of turn of events did that give you, that passion?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Brazil is just part of your day-to-day life. I mean, Brazil has extreme inequality. In the same neighborhood, you can see extreme wealth and extreme poverty. I think that was extremely impactful in my own life. My grandparents and great-grandparents also went to Brazil without. So that was a big inspiration on how can I leverage this background in computer science, everything that I'm doing in AI to have more social impact. So at Stanford, I started CS plus Social Good, which is computer science plus social good. So it was Stanford's first official organization to combine technology and social impact. So we run official computer science classes. They're all project focused. Students work with nonprofits to help solve their problems. We host speakers who talk about different applications of tech for social impact. So that was a big part of my experience at Stanford. And then even later at Stanford, I think everything I do, whether it's Lope or my first company, I try to tie that into how can I maximize impact. So for example, my first company was in self-driving cars. A big driver there is just seeing how globally you look at the top 10 causes of death. Most of them are some type of disease, but one of them, which is driving crashes, is human-made. So I was thinking, okay, how can we improve this system that's human-made and make driving safer? So that was a big inspiration for my first company.
So let's talk about that first company. What ended up happening there? Because I mean, literally, you started that company, you know, right after Stanford. And that was like your segue into Nauta, which kind of like changed everything, you know, for you being able to work with one of your professors there. So what happened with that first business?
Yeah, for sure. So we had an exit to Nauta. So I started Newton right after graduation. It wasn't easy, but it was a big learning experience. I feel like I had no experience, no track record. I was learning on the go. I was making mistakes. And I think a lot of that dictated like the way I run Slope, like our culture, the way I managed the company. And I was also a solo founder, and being a solo founder in deep tech was extremely difficult. And then after the exit to Nauta, so I joined Nauta, I was running AI platforms and data science. I was fortunate that Stefan, the CEO, Russell, the CTO, they both gave me a lot of autonomy. So I was able to really learn about, okay, what is it like to run these teams at a later stage company?
So then let's talk about how the experience of Nauta, you know, kind of like polished your worldview of startups, because here you had the opportunity to work with like a rocket ship, right, with Nauta. And you were there for over 2 years. And by the way, for the people that are listening, Stefan Hack was also on the podcast. So, you know, if they want to check out that story with Nauta, you know, go and take a look at that episode. But how was it like to be able to experience that, to experience a company like that, and to also have the opportunity to work with someone like Stefan, you know, that is a remarkable, you know, individual.
Yeah, I think what was great about the experience was just having kind of the two things. One, the autonomy of being a startup founder. I feel like within the team that I was running, I was giving a lot of autonomy to prioritize things and work on everything, like not only on the technical aspects, but everything from like I worked on design, I worked on sales calls, and basically the everything end to end, just because of all the autonomy that they gave me. But at the same time, you're at a larger company, which was very different from being at my first company, where you start the company. And of course, because you're the founder, people report to you and people follow what you do. When you're at a larger company, there's more work that you need to do in terms of like cross-team collaboration, persuading stakeholders, handling disagreements. So I think there was this whole like real world experience that I didn't have before that Nauta gave me, while also giving all the autonomy.
So let's talk about then that moment where you decide, because as they say, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. No? So in your case, after a couple of years there at Nauta, you started to think that it was time to get back at it. No, so how would that happen? And also, what were the sequence of events for you to be able to bring Slope to life?
Yeah, so I think my goal was always to maximize impact. So I actually, the CTO told me that he was surprised I didn't leave earlier. So he was not surprised at all to hear the news. And then after leaving Nauta, I explored some ideas with my co-founder. My co-founder is a longtime friend, Alice. So she studied at Berkeley. Berkeley and Stanford, they have a rivalry for the people who are in the Bay Area. They have the big game, that's the American football game between the two. We co-hosted the big hack. That was a hackathon version of that. Yeah, and we stayed in touch. And then we explored a bunch of ideas. We had a process. And throughout the process, I think one thing that stood out was going back to like building something for us. And growing up in Brazil, I experienced firsthand the pain points that my parents have, because they have a wholesale business that they've been running for more than 3 decades. And during COVID, I saw how they had to digitize their business. So I saw firsthand how there were no good solutions. I think one thing that sometimes people forget is these business owners, they're also consumers. So they're using Amazon and all their great products, and they're seeing amazing e-commerce, like consumer e-commerce and payments experiences. On the other hand, there's like a stack of paperwork for them to do anything in terms of like B2B payments. So that was initial inspiration to bring a consumer grade payments experience to B2B.
So then talk to us about the business model of Slope. What ended up being the business model of Slope and how are you guys making money?
So Slope is a B2B2B model. So the first B is a B2B merchant. So we work with enterprise wholesalers who sell to other businesses. Basically, the value add to them is to bring their payments offline, online. So typically, they're doing things manually and offline, and we're able to help them digitize that process. And then the last B is the business buyer. So there's a wide range of businesses there. So it can be a small SMB or a larger business that's paying using Slope. Basically, their business model has been to charge a fee in the transaction volume.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out. So then I know that you've also raised some money, and you've raised money from very tier one investors. I mean, we're talking about some of the most influential people in the world of startups and tech. So how did you go about really creating such an unbelievable network, you know, from someone that is coming from Brazil, you know, to be able to engineer that and to get all these people on board? I mean, how did you do that? And I guess before you answer that, you've raised quite a bit between equity and debt. So how much have you raised in total?
Yeah, for sure. So we raised a total of $77 million and $175 million in debt.
Okay, so now talk to us about that network. How did you go about building the network? And how would you say that financing rounds have shifted over time for you guys?
I would say it's been kind of like, I mean, from many different paths. So Sam, I actually met him back in college. He taught a class called CS183B, which was how to start a startup. So he brought a lot of like later stage YC founders in every class to teach about like different aspects of like starting and running a startup. So that was, not having a lot of exposure to startups and tech growing up, I think that class was really opened up my eyes to the possibilities and like all these great founders who are like coming here and talking about their companies. So we stayed in touch since then. I would say other investors. So Alice was already in YC. So we got into YC again. And I feel like we almost got rejected So our partner, Brad, he actually called us and he was like, hey guys, so we applied with a different idea that was called AirDesk. It was Airbnb for office space. So Brad called us and he was like, hey guys, as you can probably tell from the interview, we don't really like the idea, but we really like you guys. So I think he really pushed to accept us. So they gave us a chance. And then I think one thing that Sam says that's really like key to this philosophy is iteration pace. So basically we iterated into a product that got traction. I think because we got traction leveraging YC, I think we've been able to get more investors. We're also really good at like sending updates every single month. and we highlight we're extremely transparent. If there's anything good and bad, I think that builds a lot of trust between investors. So it's been kind of like that network of like, okay, investors will build trust. They introduce us to other investors. And we love having operators. I mean, not just Sam, but the founders of DoorDash, Dropbox, the founders of Unity, Opendoor, and other great companies. We love having people have done this before at different scales and tap into their knowledge.
So the equity versus debt, why did you guys go about doing both? And how does it differ, you know, raising one or the other, and especially for a business like Slope?
I mean, being a fintech, we need both, because as part of B2B payments, one thing that we realize is 80% of global trade has some type of financing. Whether it's a supplier saying, hey, you can pay me in net 30, net 60, or whether it's invoice factoring or other traditional ways to get financing for B2B purchases. So we realized that was essential for B2B. I mean, if you see in B2C, there are so many financing options. For SMBs, it's even more essential. Cash flow is the life and blood of businesses. So basically, that's why we have these debt warehouses, because they amplify our capacity. So we don't need to deploy our own capital. So we have a warehouse with JP Morgan, which we just announced. We have another one with First Citizens Bank and with Trinity Capital.
So obviously, you know, we're talking about people. So How do you guys go about hiring too at Slope? How do you guys go about building culture?
Yeah, I mean, we're extremely selective. So we have 25 people in the team today. We are always punching above our weight. We have some public company customers. We closed our first enterprise customer, just being Alice and I. We raised our Series A, I think, at about 4 people. So yeah, so I think we try to keep the team super lean and super nimble. I think we give out very few offers. We have an extremely rigorous interview process. I would say in general, in terms of culture, we look for people who are hands-on. So to give you an example, our CFO, Ashish, he was an executive at SoFi and Deutsche Bank. Our GC, Yuna, was an executive at Wells Fargo and Robinhood. They're both extremely hands-on. So they will take customer calls, they'll do customer support, they'll tell the customer, hey, you need to refresh your browser. And there's nothing is too trivial. We all like work on sales. We didn't have a sales team until a couple months ago. So I think being hands-on is part of our culture. I would say the other thing that we look for is always high-slope people. We want people who are able to pick up new things and learn fast, which we call like the slope of the curve. It should be high, the starting points can be low. So, I mean, Alice and I, we didn't have any finance experience before starting Slope, but we talked with angel investors, we learned pretty fast. So high Slope is a big part of our culture. We're also very like no BS. We're extremely transparent. So everyone, the team knows our revenue, knows our cash, runway, every single financial metrics. They have access to it real time. So we have dashboards, our bank accounts are connected through Plaid in short databases. People can see every single corporate spend. So there's nothing to hide. We're extremely transparent. We're very results driven. We're very anti-politics. Yeah, I think we also collaborate really closely. I mean, we're very competitive. We like having fun together. We just ran the SF Half Marathon actually a couple of weeks ago. And we like doing like whitewater rafting, like different sports together. We did a burpee challenge. Our CFO is the unchallenged winner.
That's amazing. So as we're talking about people here, I want to talk about vision, because obviously all these people, whether it's employees, investors, even customers, they're ultimately excited about the future that you're living into. No? And so if, let's say you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Slope is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, I think we want to see much more of the B2B economy digital. And not only that, I think the reason why we believe that's important is because that enables access to different digital services. To us, it's kind of like the B2B economy being digital is more of like creating that data layer, that B2B data layer. On top of that, you can get easier access to like different bank accounts that you would otherwise not be approved by in traditional processes, get access to different types of like finance products, AR automation, and different things that help you run your business.
I want to ask you this, because obviously, I mean, the way that you guys are growing now is unbelievable. But at what point do you really feel, looking back, that it really truly felt like you guys had hit product market fit? What did that look like?
I would say early on, I think because both Alice and I were second-time founders, so we've had a first company that had much less traction. I think we've seen firsthand what that looks like, just how like the customer calls feel, how much you need to push, how much you need to sell. I think at Slope, literally every single month, we feel understaffed. Every single month, we feel like we have more demand than we can handle. So I think it's a very subjective feeling, not like a specific metric. I mean, there are metrics that we measure, but I would say it's mostly the feeling that every single month since we launched, we're understaffed, we have more demand than we can handle, and we're actually trying to be selective. And we decline a bunch of merchants because we're like, okay, we need to focus and like serve fewer merchants, but serve them extremely well.
So as we're talking about like going back in time, I want to ask you, if I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time, let's say to that moment where you were thinking about starting, you know, something here with Alice. And let's say you had the opportunity of having a chat with your younger selves and you were able to give that younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I would say iteration is extremely important and experimentation and listening to your customers. I think just getting something live out there is really important. I would say that that's been night and day difference between my first company and Slope. First company was very driven by, okay, I'm doing all this AI research. I think this is extremely interesting. There's some big vision. I think the big vision is important, but equally important is also to listen to your customers. And I think it was more of a tech first approach for my first company. I would say for Slope, we're being a lot more customer centric. So really focused on iteration. So we actually didn't start with B2B payments. I mean, we started with that Airbnb for office space idea. It wasn't just that idea. We had a long list of 100 plus ideas. We iterated through a bunch of ideas. We launched a few products. We even got revenue with other products. Talked with a bunch of customers, my parents included, and that eventually led to Slope.
So as we're thinking about like learning and really being able to capture the best and to be able to receive feedback too and guidance, I mean, you've been able to build a remarkable network, you know, especially with all these investors that you've been able to surround yourself by, you know, some of the biggest names that we can think of in Silicon Valley. I guess the question that comes to mind is, how do you go about getting the most out of the people that are surrounding you? You know, one thing is obviously to get the right people to be around you, but then the other thing is to be able to keep them engaged and to get the best and the most out of them. How do you go about that?
Yeah, I think at Slope, what's been key is just having a pull relationship. So we're never afraid of like asking for things. So even anyone on the cap table will always ask for help. And we're very, like, we're not really not shy about it. And we're not afraid of like getting no as an answer. I think that's one thing that I learned, like when I was in auto, I think being given so much autonomy, I think that was important. And I just learned to like ask for what I want. So we do that all the time for investors, and we're not like, oh, and very often like people appreciate. I think people want to know that they're being helpful. We always have a very long thank you section in every single investor update. Yeah, I think we're always actively asking for things.
So for the people that are listening, Lawrence, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I mean, you can email me at lawrence@slopebay.com.
Is it enough? Well, Lawrence, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today with us. It has been an absolute honor to have you here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.